Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, May the 30th.
I'm practically perfect from head to toe. If I had a fault, it would never dare to show. I'm so practical.
That's Practically Perfect in Every Way, sung by Mary Poppins herself. It's also the title of a new book by our guest this hour. Jennifer Nestline spent a year following the advice of dozens of self-help experts who promised her guidance in getting rich and getting organized and getting healthy and getting her to be practically perfect in every way. Or was she that way all along? That's the question this hour. Do we really need all these self-help gurus in order to live better lives? Is there anything wrong with getting advice from self-help experts? We'll wonder if you have had any good experiences or misadventures in the world of self-help, and we'll also wonder why the self-help gurus have so many disciples. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send us your story or question via email, talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guest. Jennifer Nestline is co-founding editor of the award-winning magazine Brain Child, the magazine for thinking mothers, and she is the author of the recently published Practically Perfect in Every Way, My Misadventures Through the World of Self-Help and Back. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what prompted you to embark on this adventure?
Well, my dog was dying.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
A great first thing to say, you know. And so it was my first real encounter with mortality, and it got me thinking, as the cliche goes, about what sort of person I am and what I'm doing with my life and all that. And it came to a head when I was watching Oprah, as I often do, and she said, the first thing about fixing your life is honoring the truth about your life. And I thought, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And then my next thought was, well, maybe this is what's wrong. I don't have to be so dismissive of things that I haven't tried. And so I thought this was I would be a good guinea pig.
Mm-hmm. So you wanted to figure out what honoring the truth in yourself was all about?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I saw that there was room for improvement, definitely, mm-hmm. in my life.
So what was the first area you tackled?
I came up with this program. So I started with the more mundane stuff, and I tried to declutter my house.
Oh, yeah, that's I have that on my list every year.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I used, there's in each chapter, there's about three different experts. And I used Karen Kingston, who has this book about decluttering your house using feng shui. I'm not sure that I'm pronouncing that right, but...
close enough, yeah.
Yeah, and then I used the Fly Lady.
Yeah, who is the Fly Lady? I know various declutter experts, but who is the Fly Lady?
Well, I picked a lot of experts, mm-hmm. that everybody knew, like Dr. Phil and Dr. Laura, but the Fly Lady is sort of this cult, you know, guru. Well, I'm making her sound like she's crazy, but she's not crazy in the way that I'm making her sound. Mm-hmm. Fly stands for finally loving yourself.
Okay.
And I had read about her on internet message boards, and the people were saying, you know, it sounds nuts, but you know, it totally works, and that was enough to get me going.
And the Fly Lady helps you declutter your house, or just do everything better?
Declutter your house.
Okay.
Fly stands for finally loving yourself, and so you can tell if you're finally loving yourself if your house is decluttered. She sends about 15 emails a day, which, you know, sounds like just adding to the clutter, but she has a lot of tips, and, you know, it worked for me, actually.
Did it really?
Yeah.
So your house is uncluttered right now?
Well, it worked for me until I realized that I was the only one interested in my house and decluttering it.
You're talking about husbands and children not being so interested in that?
Right, right. I talked to my husband, and he said 15 emails a day?
Yeah, and do you have this feng shui arrangement of furniture, too?
I don't. It's not. She doesn't go into the arrangement of furniture.
That was Karen Kingston.
Yes.
Yeah.
She doesn't actually even do the furniture so much. She just talks about, you know, clearing away clutter. She says it makes your aura smell musty, and so if you get your surroundings right, your energy will be better. And at the end, I mean, she has, you know, pretty conventional ways of getting rid of your clutter, but once you do it, she says you can spiritually cleanse your house. I thought, ooh, great, you know, an exorcism. I can, that'll be fun.
So I take it that Fly Lady helped you a little bit in organizing the house, but you didn't really spiritually cleanse your house with Karen Kingston?
I'm not really sure that I did. When I was doing it, there's all these props that went with it, like holy water, and that was a whole other thing, trying to get my hands on some holy water. I wound up blessing it myself. And, you know, bells, and I was clapping in the corners. And at the end, you're supposed to, you know, try to put out these good vibes. And, you know, and it was nice in a way, but also I felt a little ridiculous in a way, too. And so it was a double-edged thing.
All right, so besides what other mundane tasks did you seek self-help experts to help you with?
Setting up a retirement account.
Oh, okay, a financial advisor.
Yeah.
Susie Orman is who you went after?
Yep, I used her advice. I used David Bach, who does, you know, he has a ton of books, of, you know, Do Something, Finish Rich. So the one I used was Smart Couples, Finish Rich.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at this book that was about financial independence. And it's a lot more radical. So I didn't take that advice. But yeah, I did that, and it was a huge learning curve for me.
Yeah, I still don't understand it all. But it was not necessarily an unpleasant, or was that a misadventure in terms of seeking help for your personal finances?
In a way, it was, because it leads you to all these larger ideas, and I kept bumping up against this in the book. That, you know, I'd be going along taking it. The advice, and then I'd think, do I really want to invest in this company? Do they really, you know, match with my values? And is that where I want to put my money? And so there was, it all got very sticky very quick, I felt like.
Mm-hmm. So what other areas did you get self-help advice from?
Marriage. I took advice from Dr. Laura, which is, you know, a little strange for me, but
yeah. What? Go ahead.
Well, I had heard that, you know, she was kind of a hoot, and from an unlikely source said, oh, yeah, she kind of makes sense, too. And so I thought, oh, I'll give it a shot.
Pardon the question, but what does Dr. Laura say that makes sense?
Well, that's kind of what I was wondering once I picked up the book. But she, you know, she knows how to hit buttons. Her book is... mostly, the one I used was The Proper Care and Feeding of Husbands.
Oh.
And so it's mostly made up of anecdotes. And I found out that in her world, which I think is true of a lot of self-help, the problem in the relationship is always the woman, and the fix in the relationship always rests on the woman's shoulders.
In her general line is that the woman should really talk, you know, I don't know, make her husband feel good and submit.
In a way,
mm-hmm.
One part of the advice I took from her, I have this magazine and I work during the day, and then I stop when my son gets home at 3 from school, so. You know, it's a full-time job, so I make up the extra couple hours at night. So I stopped doing that because, you know, one of the things was maybe your husband doesn't feel like he's a priority in your life. And I found out later that my husband didn't even realize that I was doing that experiment.
So what about, didn't you also look to Dr. Phil?
I did.
Yeah.
I did his relationship rescue. And you do a lot of journaling. And before this whole experiment, I'd never used journal as a verb before.
Mm-hmm.
You do a lot of journaling, and then there's a 14-day program where you and your mate sit down and look at each other, and then you take turns talking for 3 minutes each. So you're sitting there with a timer, and he gives you a topic, and you know one of you blathers on, and the other person just sits there and listens. And then when the first person is finished, all the mate can say is, "Thank you for caring enough to share, and I promise to weigh it carefully."
So did that rescue your relationship?
It did not. I think it united us in our dislike of Dr. Phil.
Let me take a short pause and welcome callers to talk with Jennifer Nesline. She is the author of the just published Practically Perfect in Every Way, My Misadventures Through the World of Self-Help and Back. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Jennifer Nesline spent a year following the advice of many, many self-help gurus like Dr. Phil and Dr. Laura and who else? We'll talk about Dr. Weil and Susie Orman, how to improve our lives, how to raise smarter kids, how to have stronger relationships, how to lose weight. We'll welcome your stories about self-help advisors that you have sought, and welcome your calls at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Plus, why do so many of us seek the help of others along these lines? This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 22 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, May the 30th. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon between 4 and 6. After 5 on Education Today, Ben's guest will talk about the benefits and challenges to the year-round education effort. That's coming up after 5. We're talking with Jennifer Nesline, who is the author of Practically Perfect in Every Way, which chronicles her year-long quest to follow the advice of self-help gurus. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for her at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I know you sought the advice of many other self-help experts, Jennifer Nesline, but what's your bottom line? Was this worthwhile for you or a complete waste of time?
Well, it was a lot more complicated, I think, than I thought when I went into it. I went in thinking what, you know, self-help could do for me. I thought, you know, this is a really great project. If worst case, I get some funny stories. Best case, I get a clean house. I get, you know, I lose weight. I am just happier. And that's really what almost all the experts promise is happiness. But I came out wondering what self-help did to me. I think I went a little crazy focusing on myself so much.
How so?
I started sleepwalking more. I started having panic attacks. The first two chapters, you know, you can sort of, you don't have to get so emotionally invested in the clutter and the finances. But when you're taking advice on marriage and parenting and community, all these interpersonal things, I think it makes you really self-conscious and really, really navel gaze when you have to consider everything you say before you say it.
And are you doing it just exactly right or not?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know, like in the parenting chapter, that's when I really started to unravel, which was both embarrassing and ironic, given you know I edit a parenting magazine. And I'm well aware of, you know, what the experts say, and I know the whole sort of formula and all that. But one of the experts, you know, kept asking, well, what kind of role model are you? And after a while, I was like, hey, yeah, that's right. What kind of role model am I? Mm-hmm. You know, I noticed he would, you know, my son would be a smart ass, and I'd think, oh, where'd he get that? Gee, it's pretty clear.
Yeah, and in fact, it says here that all of the self-improvement experts couldn't help you get your six-year-old from sleeping in your bed when he wants to.
Yeah, that's the one experiment I sort of backed out of, because we'd started this co-sleeping thing, and, you know, here he was 6 years later still in the bed. And so I thought, you know, I geared up for this. I looked at Dr. Sears, who's like the attachment parenting, you know, guy, go-to guy. And so I thought, okay, we'll get Caleb out of the bed. And then I had prepared and I talked to him that night, and he said, I'm never going out of the bed. I'm never sleeping by myself. I said, why? You know, you're sleeping. It doesn't matter. And he said, well, if I go out of the bed, then I won't have anybody to cuddle with. And that just sort of broke my heart. And I thought, you know, he's not going to be there forever. I've never heard of a 15-year-old sleeping with their parents, you know, in a non-news-breaking sort of way, you know. So
the experts be darned on that one, huh?
Yeah, and that's really the only one that I just abandoned. I thought, oh, I can't do it. It's not worth it.
Let's take in some calls. Fred in Watertown joins us. Hi, Fred. You're on the air. Fred. Fred's not there anymore. Fred was going to talk about his efforts in trying to lose weight and went through a lot of different things, but apparently he says hypnosis did help him lose weight.
Oh.
Talk about what you did in terms of health and fitness.
Well, I started off with an article from O Magazine. And that was sort of, I'm not sure that I followed that as well as I could have. Just magazine articles are generally not specific enough. But then I signed up for Dr. Weil's Optimum Health. And it's supposed to be a whole lifestyle change. It's not a fad sort of diet. And I, you know, started walking every day and cut out a lot of stuff from my diet. He's very into, you know, natural, organic, you know, if you can't pronounce it, don't eat it sort of thing. And I lost about 10 pounds. So
that worked.
Yeah, it did. And I think, I was very adverse to exercising. I don't like to sweat. But I started walking every day. And, you know, I got an iPod, which was really sort of the turning point to me. It's like, well, you know, it's not exercising. It's walking around listening to music, so...
Yeah. All right. Judy in Reedstown. Let's see if Judy's there. Hi, Judy. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm just wondering whether you could describe the effect of some of your experiences as a kind of a placebo effect. It works because you and the rest of us are probably, we don't have confidence in the kind of advice we can give to ourselves. Mm. And so we trust the life coaches and the other people that like to give advice or are in the business of giving advice and are willing to predict an unprovable outcome for us, too. And that's what I mean about placebo. Do we finally convince ourselves that, yeah, we've done it?
I think one of the reasons that we go to these people is that a lot of stuff has been put on the individual, you know, not just in self-help, but in our culture and government. Like, you know, everybody has to reinvent the wheel with childcare, for example, or... you know, we're all now supposed to be responsible for our own retirement. And so the ramifications for messing up are so big that I think, you know, we're just looking for things that have been vetted already. But yeah, I think you're right. You can't prove something either way. I mean, I call what I was doing experiments, but, you know, there's no control group.
Yeah. So you're not necessarily critical of those of us or the fact that so many of us seek out the help of these gurus?
No. I mean, I think it comes from a really good, noble impulse. We all want to achieve a certain kind of peace in our life. And, you know, and sometimes an expert will say something that just sort of hits you right. Like for me, it was Jon Kabat-Zinn's Wherever You Go, There You Are. And that's sort of his book of you know, meditative thoughts and how to, you know, it's sort of a hippy dippy book. And I'm not at all hippy dippy, but it just, something about it just struck me as, yeah, this is what I need to hear right now.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer Nestline, our guest, co-founding editor of the magazine Brain Child, the magazine for thinking mothers, and author of the just published Practically Perfect in Every Way, My Misadventures Through the World of Self-Help and Back. It chronicles her experiences binging on self-help advice from self-help gurus, dozens of them. And we're talking about what she learned and what she didn't, and welcoming your experiences with the self-help gurus or your questions for her at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. I wonder if you have any help advice for us, Jennifer Nestline, compared to with all of your experience with this, on how there are so many of these self-help gurus out there. You know, how do you tell the good from the bad? How did you decide which ones to take up and which ones to leave on the bookshelf?
Well, there were a couple, actually, that I just couldn't follow their advice. There were two books I tried to do, and I just literally hit a dead end because I didn't know what else to do. It was sort of impossible to take.
Like what? What are the two that you couldn't follow?
One with Tony Robbins, because I realized I would have to spend my entire life, this would be more of like a 10, 20-year project, because he just has so much.
I see him on infomercials and the like, but he has like tapes and such that will somehow motivate us just to be better people?
Yeah. He has a whole, you know, it's a whole thing where he, you know, he keeps it sort of general, and you can apply it to whatever specific area of your life you want to.
Mm-hmm. So Tony Robbins couldn't do that one.
I couldn't do that one. Mm-hmm. And then another one was this parenting book that used the Enneagram, which I hadn't.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I didn't either. So the idea is you figure out, you know, what type of parent you are, sort of like a horoscope in a way, you know, so you can, everybody falls into like one of these nine categories. And then you can tell, like, you know, your parenting strengths and what you need to watch out for and that sort of stuff by figuring out what kind of person you are. So, I found which of the three broad categories I was in, and then I was looking, you know, specifically what sort of parent I was, the subset of that. And I couldn't find it. I was kept reading it thinking, all these people sound crazy. And then I flipped to the index. And it turns out the Enneagram is based on categories of mental illness from, I think it was the DSM-3. And it was, like, invented in the 1970s. And I thought, well, no, I don't know. I know people with mental illness, and I think it was sort of creepy and offensive to me. So I just couldn't go any further with that one. But some of the experts I really liked. One of them was Martin Seligman. He's sort of one of the main guys in the positive psychology field, which is a newish field that focuses on positive emotions as opposed to mental illness. And one of the things he says is, you know, focus on your strengths and forget about your flaws. Use your strengths to compensate for your flaws. And that struck me as some good, solid advice.
That just means if one of your strengths is being nice to people, be extra nice to people. If one of your flaws is something else, I'm not sure I understand that. So,
well, say, you know, one of my weaknesses is, say, forgiveness. Actually, it's very much one. You take these online tests, and you could see where you are in terms of all the other test takers. I scored in the 1st percentile in forgiveness.
Mm. So you've got to work on
that. Yeah, I realized, man, I didn't realize it was that.
You're going to get on the wrong side of you.
Yeah, but, you know, so I found out, say, one of my strengths was sense of humor. So if the way I interpret it is if I can sort of joke myself out of something getting mad, then I won't have to worry about, you know, whether or not I'm going to forgive somebody.
Let's go back to the phones. Ben in... I'm sorry, where are you from, Ben?
Marengo.
Okay, go ahead.
I noticed that on a previous talk show, you had somebody on, and they were saying how they looked at people's minds, and say you were an extreme liberal, okay, in all of your thinking, then when you would hear people talk liberal in politics, your mind actually fired up because it supports what you believe anyway, and in fact, you shut down. So it's almost like drugs. When somebody says something you believe, your mind lights up and you go for it. And if they say something that you don't believe in anyway, you just kind of shut down. Well, I'm kind of a very introspective person. I'm an artist and musician. And I've noticed that what we all need to do, like you looked at all these different people and what they said, and really... If you think about a company that's gone wrong, they pay a lot of money to consultants to come in and tell them what's wrong. And what do the consultants do? They talk with everybody in the factory and find out what's wrong. They make sure it's private and nobody knows who said what. And then they go back and they tell the people what's wrong with the factory. They could have found that out themselves. And I think the same thing with us. The truth can set you free, and being introspective and checking yourself out, and you really know what to do. In your gut level feeling about like your child sleeping with you, and what did he say?
Mm-hmm.
I have no one to cuddle with. Well, I experienced that when I was a kid. My brother and I, we had a small room. We slept in a big bed until he went in the Navy, and I was around 10, 11. I was just totally devastated because I didn't realize this, how much cuddling and being close, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we've always had our bedroom's never been a closed door. We've raised 13 kids. We had 11 together. Family is obviously important to us. We're
mm-hmm.
Mormons. We believe in children. And the children can come in the room if they're having a bad dream or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And until they're, maybe 3 years old or four, you'll find the child comes in the room and sleeps with you, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it at all, you know, and they'll eventually think, well, gee, I'm a little old for that, and they'll go sleep
right,
in their own bed.
Ben, so your point is that you look for the experts that say that that's okay, you believe what you believe in, and those experts who say that's not okay, you dismiss that.
I think we do. I really think we do, and they think self-help books work because the person's motivated to change themselves, probably even better than psychiatry, I heard. That if you really feel motivated, that you need some changes, that's probably the most important step.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want to comment on that, Jennifer?
No, I think that's true. I think you could find an expert to support whatever you believe. I went into this trying to keep an open mind. I was sort of a self-help virgin, and I went in, you know, I was used to getting my insights in a more sideways approach. You know, not through self-help. I mean, I don't know. It just seems like self-help is sort of the most artless way of reading advice, you know.
Does your magazine provide parents with parenting tips and self-help stuff?
No.
I didn't think so.
No,
yeah.
No, we were one of the first magazines that really, we weren't anti-expert, but that wasn't what we were interested in. We wanted to delve into the experience of motherhood and, focus on the parent, not so much the tips, because there's plenty of stuff out there for that.
Yeah. Thanks to Ben for the call. Let me go now to Drew in Shell Lake. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just a couple comments. Wanted to know what your author thought, or the author thought of Stephen Covey, Seven Habits. And my other comment is the chapter on seeking to understand first and then to be understood has really served me well. And I'll listen to your comments.
Well, wait. Before you go, why did it serve you well, Drew? Because I'm not even sure our guest will have a lot to say about that.
Sure. Let's see if I can describe it in a nutshell. When talking to anyone, they sometimes don't always want to be fixed, I guess, and just... listening and understanding their point of view, and then
mm-hmm.
if they want advice, they'll ask for it.
So you,
how about that? I think maybe that's it. When people want advice, they'll ask for it instead of you receiving their information and then giving your opinion, maybe they didn't want it.
Right.
And that's what is the cause of some frustration with people, or not relationships or conversations. They just want to give you your advice, or they want to give their own advice when the person really doesn't want it.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer Nestline?
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't do the Seven Habits. My husband, he worked for a big corporation, and they actually had a class that they had to take in that. I did do Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, and that's something he really gets at too, is that it's, you know, you have to be sincere and just listening and not approaching it in a, you know, you don't want to be bossy. And I think that some the good experts all say you can't change other people. You know, you can really only focus on everybody except for the parenting experts, and they clearly you can change your children is what they're saying.
Our guest is Jennifer Nestline. She is the author of Practically Perfect in Every Way, My Misadventures Through the World of Self-Help and Back, which chronicles her year-long quest to improve her life by trying to follow the advice of all of the various self-help gurus who are out there right now. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number. If you have an experience, perhaps, of seeking advice from a self-help guru, we welcome that, or any questions or thoughts you have about this phenomenon. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn is with you, talking with her guest about allergies. Are you in allergy agony? Kathleen's guest is an allergist with tips on surviving the sneezing season. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're exploring the world of self-help during this hour with Jennifer Nestline, who is the author of Practically Perfect in Every Way. She spent a year getting help from self-help experts and wrote about it. Some of it worked, some of it didn't, and we wonder what thoughts and questions you have about this for her. Does it work for you, self-help gurus, that is? Have you tried anybody that has worked, or maybe some who have not? 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. And our next caller is Nancy in Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'd like to tell you the story about a little program I got into last year. I have a terrible problem with household clutter, mostly paper, but not entirely. I've been a 40-year compulsive fabric buyer. I have thousands of books in this. I mean, I have a really full household. So I entered a program that was being given at the local recreation centers, given by a woman who claimed that she could give us the feeling that we could conquer this. But as this three-week program went by, and she reiterated so often about the fact that she herself came from a household as a child that was absolutely spotless and her parents never saved a thing. She married a man who'd been trained in the Navy in a submarine, and therefore, of course, he was not about to start saving anything, and she and her husband had never had children. And as these 3 weeks went by, I began to realize that this woman, you know, may have had a lot of information, but she really couldn't get into our brains, all of us suffering out there in her audience with our clutter. She couldn't give us the gift to give ourselves inner permission to get rid of things and to come to the acknowledgement that everything does have a useful life and it is all right to part with things. She didn't, you know, her own background was so different, and I found that I would have admired her so much more had she ever said, yes, I had this problem for 20 years, but I overcame it, and I'll help you overcome it. But when we heard over and over of how clutter-free her whole life had always been, somehow her whole program lost validity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering now, would this perhaps be... I would not, for instance, go to a financial advisor unless I knew for a fact that this person had once been very poor, but he really learned how to handle money.
Mm-hmm.
And, in other words, I want that person to have overcome the same problem, not simply have always come from a background where the problem never existed to begin with.
Yeah. Nancy, did you end up uncluttering your house?
To some degree, but I keep buying books.
Mm-hmm.
And a local fabric store was going out of business, so I bought more fabric. I guess the answer to that would have to be that I'm still bringing in about as much as I'm getting rid of.
Yeah, still working on it.
I don't intend to ever stop buying books. They are too important to me.
Jennifer Nestline.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I want to comment on her thoughts about the best type of self-help guru.
I'm with her because one of the experts that I really liked was Susie Orman because she had, you know, she comes from a working class background. It's not like she grew up, you know, with people talking about, you know, their investments over dinner or, you know, anything like that. I'm with you. I agree. I'd like to have somebody who knows where I'm coming from.
Yeah, Susie Orman, I just learned the last time I talked to her on this program. I didn't know this before, but she actually lived in her car for a while as a waitress.
Oh, wow.
So she really pulled herself up by her bootstraps. But anyway, what about this give ourselves permission to let go of some of this stuff? That was Nancy's, I guess that's what she thought would be the most helpful thing to learn. You know, Nancy knew this mm-hmm. already, and she still went to this self-help guru, though. That's what struck me. She said, I would have respected her so much more if she would have said, you have permission to throw this away. Nancy already knew that, but she was in a three-week program to declutter.
Well, when I was telling people about this book, half of them would, you know, think, well, you know, good luck shooting the fish in the barrel. You know, we know this stuff already. And then half of the people they'd sort of come out of the closet with their, you know, their own self-help quest that they've been doing. You know, you have to read this book, or I have to show you my stack of books that have worked for me. So I think there's, I think some people are drawn to it, and some people sort of, you know, poo-poo the ideas. And, you know, either way works for me, but, you know.
Have you learned if there is a certain type of person that is drawn to the self-help books?
I can't say that I have learned that because I was very surprised by who, you know, who sort of came out about it. So
let's go next to Alex in Wauwatosa. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Hello, Joy. Hello to the guest. If I were to write a self-help book, I think it would be Public Radio is Good for the Soul, and that would be my title.
Hear, hear.
But,
you know, I've looked at a number of these books, and they're probably not all wrong, but they're probably not all entirely right either. So taking perhaps a more eclectic position towards them would probably be, in my view, the most healthy thing. And my other observation about these books is that they're written in a rational way, and humans are very irrational. And so that's why I think maybe a flesh and bone psychotherapist, psychiatrist would be better, you know, for an individual with individual irrational problems. And I'll listen on the radio. Thanks a lot.
Jennifer Nestline.
I disagree. I mean, I agree with that, you know. Though I would have to say that not every expert comes across as all that rational. I think their tone might be, but when you break down the advice, like one expert I read said that, you know, if this advice doesn't work for you, come back and read this paragraph every day until it does.
Do you remember the paragraph?
I don't, but it was about getting your mate to participate in Dr. Phil's program. I thought, how, you know, what a big, I don't know what I could say on the air, but what, maybe a big ego is.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, you're not, Alex was saying, well, maybe some of these gurus are okay and some of them are not, but it's somewhere, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. And that's mm-hmm. kind of where you fall on this too, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And some of my favorite experts, I think, you know, because I focus too much on myself, I really like the ones who give equal time to focusing on yourself and also focusing on on the larger world, figuring out your place in the larger world, what you're doing with your life, that sort of thing. And I think that's one of the, I think that might be the secret to Oprah's success, is that she really, you know, through the course of a week or a month on her program, so, you know, half the shows are about sort of inward looking and the other half are, you know, focused outwardly. And
so did you figure out exactly what she meant when she said you have to honor the truth in yourself, and what prompted you on this quest? So did you, what is the truth in yourself?
Well, I think it's something like know thyself and also know thy circumstances. And, I think it's know what you're capable of. That's the way I take it.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Jennifer Nestline. She is the author of the just published Practically Perfect in Every Way, My Misadventures Through the World of Self-Help and Back. And we welcome your questions for her, maybe even your own experiences, your own misadventures through the world of self-help. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Also interested if you have any thoughts on why so many of us look to these experts to live fuller lives or to improve ourselves in some way. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Steve in Madison is with us next. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes. I don't know if things have changed in the last 20, 25 years, but I remember when I went through a divorce about 20 years ago and also the end of a long-term relationship, I really dived into those books talking about relationships and recovering from divorce and such as that. And the thing I noticed then was, one, they all did seem to say pretty much the same thing, that is building your self-confidence and getting back out in the world. It's just that each one took a little different take on it, but it all came down to pretty much the same thing. The other thing I noticed was that reading it as a man, most of them were directed, well, I think maybe all of them I read were directed towards women, and I kind of had to translate it into a male perspective.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Most of these experts are gearing their advice to women, do you think, Jennifer Nestline?
I do. I mean, I think self-help is still very old school in that way, where women are in charge of the relationships, and, you know, I think in a way it sort of mirrors what's going on, you know, in the larger culture where women are, you know, now in the traditionally male sphere of work, but there aren't as many men in the traditionally, you know, female domestic sphere. So you have these books that are, you know, financial books targeted to women, but you don't really have relationship books targeted to men.
Yeah, and did you, Steve, get some help from the relationship books you were reading?
I guess I did. As I say, it was about 20, 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was mostly just building self-confidence, and I guess I would say that was the main thing.
Thank you so much for sharing that story.
Yeah.
Sarah in Dubuque is with us. Hi, Sarah.
Hello, Joy. How are you?
I'm good.
You were asking about what kind of people are kind of drawn to these things. I seem to be a poster child for self-help books. I have a whole basement full of them. And I'll tell you, I think why. I went to the Air Force Academy, and then I was in the Air Force. I was an air traffic controller. And in the military, I mean, they tell you what to wear, where to go, what to do, how to do it. And, of course, again, as an air traffic controller, we had very strict regulations. So I left the military, got married, and had a baby, and all of a sudden, I have no instructions. I mean, children do not come with instructions.
Mm-hmm.
So I was seeking out every parent book, and of course, they conflict, as you pointed out, and I was a mess. I was depressed. I couldn't get my act together, and finally, some very, very dear friends from high school came to me and said, you know what, they put their arms around me and said, you know, this is the scoop. We have kids. Come on over. We'll make you a pot of coffee. And, you know, and just enjoy your child. I mean, and it was so funny to just be around people. It was like a big breath of fresh air that, wow, they've been through it. They know what they're doing. I don't have to read all these books.
Right.
And so, again, I guess my point was, is I was looking for answers because they had always been given to me. And really, you know, as you pointed out with your guest, that even if you don't know what to do, there's somebody in your your circle of friends who can help you and who they know what to do.
Somebody once suggested to me that's another reason why is that we don't have this same sort of circle of friends or circle of family that people used to, you know, the traditional place to get advice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, but it's interesting to me.
Well, Sarah, thank you very much for the call. Your title says that you're now back. Are you not? are you not looking at these books anymore? Have you tossed them all away? Have you decluttered your home, and you're not following the advice of any of these gurus anymore?
I am taking some. I mean, some of it was good advice. Like, you know, I have a method for keeping the table cleared off, and I do walk more. I do exercise, but I think the and back part was really just, you know, in a way getting my self-confidence back and trying to. It just felt very good to not have to have an expert in my life after a while.
Yeah, let me take one more call, Bill in Wauwatosa. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. As a psychotherapist, I can certainly say that therapy is necessary and desirable and needed by many people over the course of their lifetime. But if I were going to write a self-help book, I would say on the first page, put this book down and go find happy elderly people and spend time with them. That's where your greatest wisdom will come from. And then find people in need and spend time with them.
Boy, sign him up, huh, Jennifer?
Yeah, definitely. That sounds good.
Well,
what would the rest of the pages say, though?
The rest of the pages would say, now just get a match and light this book and start a nice fire and get a cup of tea.
Well, I like that. I like that thought, Bill. Thank you very much. And Jennifer Nestline, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And you have a website, too, as well, right?
I do. It's practicallyperfectbook.com.
Right. Practically Perfect in Every Way, the name of Jennifer Nestline's new book, My Misadventures Through the World of Self-Help and Back. And we thank her very much for being with us. And we thank Carmen Jackson for producing this program and Leo Duran for on-air production. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store 1-800-747-7444. Or you can go to our website. All of our programs are archived on our website, wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm so practically.